Welcome to the Small Nonprofit Podcast with down-to-earth practical advice on how to get things done in your small organization. You are going to change the world and we can help. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and I'm joined by my co-host, Anya McGlynn.
Hello, everyone.
So Anya, today we have two guests on the podcast. They are sisters, Rochelle and Roxanne. And we're talking a lot about one of my favorite topics, which is stewardship.
Thank God it's one of your favorite topics, because like for me, I struggle with it, which I think is good, because I think a lot of our listeners will identify with that struggle.
Yeah. So tell me what you struggle with it.
Let's go deep for a second. My mother used to sit me down after, you know, Christmas or birthdays or, you know, any kind of like gift giving season where I would have received gifts from family, and she would like, she was a very forgiving, wonderful, generous woman. But on the topic of writing thank you cards, she was like just militarized and like radicalized about it. So, you know, children often don't like doing these kinds of things. And I genuinely, like, not to blame my mother for everything, but I genuinely think that like some of my struggle and like following up, like around, you know, like the gifts and all, it's like this hardwired, not hardwired, but like ingrained pattern or feeling that I've developed around writing thank you cards, which is, I recognize stewardship completely oversimplified.
No, but I think that's an interesting insight, because a lot of organizations we come across, you know, they kind of know they have to do it. Maybe they've been brought up like you, where, you know, it's the right thing to do, but for some reason they never actually get to doing that much of it. Mm-hmm. And like consistently I see this across small nonprofits, which is, oh yeah, that donor gave a few weeks ago, or, you know, the list goes on. And then in the same breath, they're saying things like, we need to find new donors, or, you know, how do I find people who can give? And the irony is that you do stewardship and you're going to keep the donors you have and potentially increase their giving.
I know my suspicion about why people don't do stewardship as much.
Go for it.
They can't find their donors. They don't know who they are. They don't know when they've given. They don't know how much they've given. They don't know what their average gift date. And they hear all of this discussion about that's the best practice, right? That you have to know these things when you steward your donor. And, you know, look, we know that there's a chronic lack of technology and systems that plagues the nonprofit sector. And so, like, you know, having that level of knowledge in order to be able to segment and effectively steward your donors is sometimes like just getting to that point is overwhelming. And so it's like, how am I even going to do this? Right. Yeah. So maybe, you know, part of the conversation is like, it doesn't have to be perfect.
Totally. And like, it doesn't have to be fancy either, you know, but it's so important. And, you know, I think this conversation is one of many conversations that we will continue to have around building relationships with your supporters and making sure they feel like they're having an impact, whether they give, you know, $10 or $10,000 or more. You know, it really... If you don't invest your time, at least in stewardship, I always talk about the revolving door of donors, right? You're spending so much time and energy to get people to give the first time. And if you don't keep them giving, the return isn't there, yeah. Right? It's not worth the effort if you can't make it meaningful and long lasting. So to me, this is like, foundational. You need to figure this out.
fully. Like like if you said to a nonprofit, hey, guess what? Like year over year, you're leaving 20% of your potential revenue on the table.
Like
at least.
I've seen reports of like a donor attrition at like 40 or donor retention at 40%. So you're losing 60% of your donors every year.
Yeah.
What?
Exactly.
Like that's If we ran a business like that, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
What a loss.
Like that's the little homework for the listeners. Like go look at your revenue from fundraising last year. And imagine that you could sort of guarantee that 50% of that's coming back in the door, you know, on top of anything that you do that's new, right? Like you would not like talk to your chair of your finance committee and tell them that and like see how quickly they they support you to prioritize your stewardship activities because you know, you need to be supported on that front.
Yeah. So we won't sort of, you know, make this point any longer. I think hopefully it's landed. But with that, it's a pleasure to introduce everyone to Rochelle Greaves and Roxanne Tacky of StoryPoint Consulting. They build fundraising capacity for nonprofit staff and volunteers that are new to the sector or have not had formal instruction. They're a small shop that values down-to-earth collaboration. They believe that you are the expert of your own organization and its mission, and that an investment in training leaves the expertise with you and your people. They provide practical guidance and processes that you can implement immediately, creating a better functioning team and a more coordinated fundraising strategy. Please join me in welcoming Rochelle and Roxanne to the podcast. Roxanne, Rochelle, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. I'm so excited. When we spoke before our recording, we just had so much fun talking about all things fundraising. I think we approach it in a really similar way. And one of the things that came up, which we're going to deep dive into today, is how to find donors. I feel like that is almost literally the million-dollar question for organizations. I know it's something that small organizations struggle with. I'm going to put my own perspective on this and say, I think part of that is because they don't necessarily always have a full understanding of fundraising. Mm-hmm. And so some of the basics that fundraisers know about, small organizations without fundraisers mm-hmm. don't. So let's kind of dive right in. You know, how do organizations, million-dollar question, how do organizations find donors?
Yeah, you know, Cindy, just to even kind of continue with what you were just saying, Rochelle and I find when we're working with organizations and we're talking with people, we always hear that million-dollar question. And the biggest challenge people usually say is, you know, I'm really busy. I'm sort of fundraising off the side of my desk. So I know it's important, but what do I do? And really, it's about what we always tell people is we always encourage people to focus on donor retention and prospecting their own donor database because, you know, we know that, you know, statistically it's going to be easier for people to retain donors than to acquire new donors. And also having a great stewardship plan and really working on donor retention is going to help you focus your time. So if you're really busy, then, you know, it helps organizations to sort of manage the workload of fundraising. So that's where we always suggest people start.
100% agree. I think, and I can't remember someone really great in our sector, but I'm not going to attribute it properly. So I won't, It says, you know, fishing in your own pond. Mm-hmm. I will in the show notes, figure out who said that. but you know, so often I see organizations and they might have like a decent sized donor base or even a small donor base, but they don't think that people who currently give to them have the capacity or potential mm-hmm. to give in a, I don't want to say like more significant way, but like for some reason we undervalue our donors that we have mm-hmm. and we don't understand what their full capacity is. So how do we start to shift our thinking around, wait a second, we don't even really know our existing donors. Mm. We don't know what they can do. Mm-hmm. And we lose them because we don't have stewardship. So how do we focus? I always say there's no value in finding new donors if you're not going to keep them. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about how do we learn to understand our donor base and then keep those donors giving or even increase their giving? That's a big question. So start where you want.
Yeah. So as Roxanne was mentioning before, that idea of, you know, looking at your donor database, because once you look at your donor database, you can really see which donors are actually quite engaged with your organization, right? And I know that even for some smaller organizations, maybe they don't have a lot of metrics, a lot of data, but you don't need a ton, right? You can look at things, you know, simple things like how much someone has donated, right? How recent was their last donation? How frequently are they donating? You can also look at the length that they've been with your organization. So just because someone hasn't donated a ton of money, if they've been with your organization for, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years, they're probably very engaged in your organization. You can look at things like, do they volunteer with your organization? And I mean, I know COVID right now has changed things right now, but how do they attend events or activities that you put on? So all of those things contribute to maybe how engaged someone is with your organization. And once you learn, or once you see in your database which individuals those are, you can start to put in a plan to build relationships with those people and maybe eventually move them up so that they become major donors for your organization.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that you identified which data points people should be looking at, because I feel like that is such a point of overwhelm for a lot of organizations, specifically if they don't capture data that well or if they're using spreadsheets. This is something we encounter a lot working with small organizations, but I, you know, all those things that you said, I feel like even if you use spreadsheets, you should be able to figure that out, right? You should be able to look at your spreadsheets or pull a query in Excel or Google Sheets and see the names that have been giving over many years, or, you know, figure out who's given more recently. Like, that information you should be able to do regardless. And if you can't, you need to invest in that. Mm-hmm. But is there a weight to, like, are any of these data points more important, or, you know, how do we balance? Like, are we looking for someone who checks all those boxes, or are we trying to, that could be a big list or a small list. So how do we focus or prioritize?
I think it depends on the organization. I mean, I think we could start maybe with the amount. I'm assuming that all organizations at least are capturing that. You can start with that. And I think also the time that someone's been with the organization, I think that could be very valuable as well. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it also depends really on your organization and what you have the capacity to do.
Yeah. One of the things I hear from organizations often is that they're hesitant to ask volunteers to give money because they give their time. And I think we'd agree that that's not true, or that's not a good strategy. Can you talk a little bit about why volunteering is on there as a criteria?
Sure, I can speak to that. You know, and that is a good point. You know, a lot of this, and this is just that idea of comfort. I'm glad you brought that out, that comfort level of speaking with people, especially for staff that don't have the fundraising background. You know, somebody who's volunteering with their organization, that speaks to that level of engagement that Rochelle was just speaking about. So, you know, someone giving their time over the years or however long that your staff and your volunteers, other volunteers have a familiarity with, you actually have an opportunity to, through casual conversation, just learn a lot more about that person and why they're interested in and why they've continued to volunteer with you. So that can actually give you some great ideas of how to start a conversation of how to ask. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people won't donate just because they really weren't asked. So we have to check, like, have we asked people to donate? Do they know that you're accepting donations? We've actually spoken to a lot of organizations and we've asked them, do your volunteers and people who participate in your programs know that you need donations? Do they know you're a nonprofit? Do they know you're a charity? And we often get people who are surprised, you know, we haven't really communicated this as well as we thought. So it is something that, you know, that we have to get over within our organizations, that it's a part of our job. Fundraising, it's kind of inevitable for pretty much all of us. So we have to get over that and just get the comfort to be able to approach people like our volunteers who are engaged.
Yeah. There's so much great things that you said there. One of the things you mentioned is, you know, having a conversation with your volunteers to understand why they care and why they're involved and how that can help you understand how to ask them in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is, like, I just want to emphasize that more than anything, because that's what we teach when we teach fundraising, is you actually start with the conversation. Mm-hmm. You need to understand your donors mm-hmm. before you start asking them for more money mm-hmm. to be the most successful as you can with your fundraising. So I love that point. And then your point about asking, which of course is true, like people in our sector, especially if they're not professional, like designated fundraisers, they don't like to ask. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we can talk a little bit about how to overcome some of that fear of asking, because of course you're never going to find donors if you don't ask.
That's true.
So how do we sort of shift our thinking around asking people to give financially?
Mm-hmm. You know, I can speak to that, Rochelle, a little bit. So, really, fundraising is essentially relationship building, right? So, it's as you mentioned, it starts with conversations and understanding why people find your organization valuable. You know, because once you have an understanding of not only what people find valuable about you, but if you as an organization have a really great understanding of what need you're filling in the community and how you're the best people to do it, then it becomes very easy to just simply tell the story of the good work your organization is doing. And that story is very compelling, regardless of the organization, regardless of the mission. So it really becomes about being able to really firmly communicate your importance in the community and what you're doing. And then once you find people who are interested in that, it makes that conversation much easier. And, you know, the other thing we always talk about is arming everybody in your organization with those stories. So it doesn't necessarily, especially if you're in a smaller organization, it doesn't end up falling on just one staff, such as the ED, to do that. A lot of times, you know, we end up having kind of an uncomfortable conversation with people where they get uncomfortable about involving their board and their board's role in fundraising. But if the board of directors, you know, some of your most key volunteers are also armed with those stories of how important you are and what you're doing, they're naturally going to want to share the good work of what you're doing. And the more you share those stories and have those conversations, the easier it becomes to make that ask. Because, you know, if you believe in the mission of what your organization's doing and you know that you're great at doing it, it does become easier to have those conversations. So practice helps.
Amazing. So we know we have to ask. Yeah. And we know most of us have some donors to start with. And as we said earlier, before you start trying to find new donors outside of your donor pool, focus on keeping those donors giving and finding the donors within your existing supporter base, which ultimately comes down to really good stewardship. And so, first of all, can we talk about what stewardship is? Because it's one of those jargon fundraising terms that, you know, we throw around like crazy, and fundraisers usually know what it means, but non-fundraisers might not. So what is stewardship? Let's start with that.
Sure. Shall I or myself?
Sure. So I think just sort of an easy way of looking at it is sort of, how are you going to communicate with your donors given the size of your organization? What is the plan around acknowledging those donors? How are you going to report to those donors? How are you going to recognize them? And how are you going to keep them engaged? So really it's about developing that plan sort of based on the size of your organization and what you can manage.
Mm-hmm. As we think about those things, for a small organization, you mentioned four things. So acknowledge, report, recognize, and engage, which is very comprehensive. So I want to kind of deep dive into those from the perspective of a small organization. And you know, what, where, how to prioritize. I think ultimately what it comes down to is how to prioritize, or what are the things that are going to have the biggest impact. So, you know, with a combination of recommendations or even stories or experiences, can you give us some examples of ways to acknowledge donors that's meaningful and impactful and not necessarily overwhelming for staff?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure, I can speak to that. You know, the thing about what we often tell people is that the thing with acknowledgement is that we really want to acknowledge donors quickly, and we want to try to be genuine in our communication with donors. So it is perfectly acceptable to send donors, you know, to send the majority of your donors a form letter that you've developed that you can, you know, kind of easily send off. But we want to make sure that that's real genuine language, and it's not sort of this template that you've found off the internet. It's real genuine language from whoever is the person whose name is on the letter. And then, you know, because we want to manage our time, for most donors, we can probably give them a form letter. For a donor that you either have a close relationship with, has been with your organization for a long time, or has donated a very significant amount, we can be more personal. So we can do something like a handwritten note or a phone call from the ED or the board president. And again, genuine language. So, but we want to do it quickly. So that's what we always tell people, you know, and as quickly as that as you can manage it within your organization. But we always encourage people to set, you know, a goal or a policy, whether that is we're going to acknowledge all gifts within a week, and we can manage that, then that's important. Just think of it even in your personal life. If someone were to give you a gift and a year later you thank them, you know, it's not going to seem as personal as an acknowledgement. So that's what we tell people.
So important. So important. And it's stuff that, again, like I feel like fundraisers have heard and talked about, but non-fundraisers haven't really considered often, you know, the speed in which we acknowledge those contributions. And I just want to, like, I always have to shout out to systems, because I think it's such an important piece. You know, I've seen organizations where they'll receive like a $10,000 check from a donor, which is significant, and it will get lost in someone's desk and not be deposited, let alone acknowledged. For like months. And so in order to work quickly, I think we really need those systems. And it doesn't have to be fancy or complicated, but we have to be clear around, and as you said, like having a policy around how quickly you're going to acknowledge someone. Can you talk a little bit more about the genuine piece? Because we talk about it a lot, but I feel like we can't talk about it enough because it's still something that I see so many organizations need improvement on. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about genuine communications, genuine letters, what does that look like for organizations?
Mm-hmm. Rochelle or me? Sure, I can talk on that one. So, you know, really we just encourage people, and what we talk about is just using personal language in the voice of whomever the letter is coming from, because people are pretty smart. They can sense if your letter is a form letter, trying to be specific in, even if you're sending a form letter, and you can be specific in how that person's contributed to your mission in some way. So if I can give an example, if you run a recreation program and you know, the money that person's contributed is going to go to helping youth, you know, 20 youth that are in a specific program, talk to them about how, you know, this money is going to help us with these 20 youth. And what we've seen as a result of these youth participating in our program is they've gone on to do something great. It's usually our acknowledgments, our first communication with the donor after the gift. So now we're not only telling them thank you for the gift, but we're setting them up for possible future communications, and we're inviting them in kind of as an investor, because that's what they are. They're investing in our mission. So now we're inviting you into like how you specifically helped us and what way your contribution has become a part of our organization. And so when you can be specific like that, then that really helps to make the letter more genuine, or whatever communication you're using, mm-hmm. you know, whether that be a note or whatever, make it more genuine when we can kind of be specific and tell them how they've helped and in what way with plain language. We don't have to be real fancy or, you know, again, as we've seen orgs that have taken just, you know, a form letter they found off the internet. So we want to try to be really
specific. I see that too. And it's so ludicrous, but you know, people, I think there's just this sense that there's a proper way to do it. And what I'm hearing from you is the proper way to do it is make it genuine to your organization, have a personal voice, and tell stories in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. That is the form to follow. That's not right. Some like form letter you find from university or something like that online. I love that. And definitely see it a lot. So in terms of, I'm going to sort of work our way through those 4 points because they're just so beautifully succinct. The reporting, you know, we sometimes forget to keep communicating with our donors after that first acknowledgement letter. So, and again, with this small shop hat on, which I know you work with small organizations, how do we manage, like oftentimes people think of their annual report as the, you know, be all and end all of reporting back to donors. And oftentimes their annual reports are not very compelling. So how do we report back to donors in a meaningful and engaging way?
Sure. I'll take that one. So before we get to that point, we just have to make sure with organizations that they're keeping those statistics and keeping that data. They're making sure that that data is clean and that they have somewhere to put it so that mm-hmm. they can pull it, so that they can report it back to their donors. The main point of reporting is you really want to show the impact that your organization is making. What are you doing, as Roxanne mentioned, with donors are essentially your investors. So what are you doing with those investor dollars to make an impact? So what you really want to do is you want to show, if you can, those, you know, your program statistics. So, you know, if you're, you know, a food bank, how many meals, you know, are you providing? How many pounds of food are you providing to people? And statistics, you know, you don't have to just give it in terms of statistics. You can also tell it in terms of stories. So again, Rox had mentioned earlier too, the testimonials. People really love stories. So if you can also give those stories in your reports, I think that really, you know, tugs at people's heartstrings, really. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of organizations where their annual report is like almost like a report to a programming report to the board, where it's like, this program did this year, and this program, these were our activities and all of that. And what I'm hearing from you is impact is not the same as activities, and people should know that if you understand theory of change. So what people aren't interested in is all the nitty gritty. We hosted this, or we had, the, you know, what have you. It's what did that do for the population that you're working with?
Exactly.
And to tell those through stories as well as statistics gives donors something really meaningful to connect with. How frequently should we be reporting back? Is it just the annual report, or are there other ideas that we can do?
I mean, I think it depends. I think an annual report is good, but maybe for some donors, again, if you start developing those relationships, I think, with your donors, there might be certain donors who would like something a little bit more frequently. Maybe they want something quarterly or, you know, every 6 months. But I think that's an option. If you have those relationships, especially with, you know, your major donors, that's a conversation you could have if they would like something a little bit more frequently, I think.
If I could even add to that, you know, what Rochelle and I tell people is, especially when people are talking about, you know, okay, but I'm too busy to create these extra reports. Mm-hmm. We tell them, we've your donor reporting into what you're already doing. So if you already have a newsletter, then, you know, talk about what you're doing to your donors. If you already have a Twitter account and you're putting out information, you know, spotlight some of the things that your donors have helped you to achieve. So you don't have to go out and create a bunch of new things. We can work with what we're already doing and figure out how we can incorporate messaging and communication to our donors throughout.
I think that's a really great way to underscore the initial conversation we had around, you know, oftentimes the best source of your donors are the ones who are closest to your organization or, in, you know, they know who you are. So treating all those other things that we're doing as if we are talking as well to our donors, I think is incredibly valuable. So yeah, I totally agree with that. Let's talk about recognition, because that is such, there's so much room for creativity, but I also think there's a lot of room for it being really stale. Like, you know, we have our one donor wall. If you, you know, if you even have that, or you list people's name in your annual report or on your website and you think like, oh, that's the recognition. So tell us a little bit more about how we can effectively recognize our donors in a way that's going to encourage them to keep giving.
I think one thing before we actually get into the recognition piece or how to recognize is making sure if your donors want to be recognized. Mm-hmm. I think that's sort of one of the first important things, because you might have a donor who is a major donor for your organization, but they might want to stay anonymous.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really important point to make sure that maybe there's a policy in place or something to make sure that you find out. And that's, that could be, again, another data point that you have in your donor database, if whether that donor wants to be recognized or not.
Mm-hmm. And I even how
first.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point. And even if they do want to be recognized, by what name, and, you know, mm-hmm. is it individual or, you know, a couple or a family or a corporation or foundation, you know, there's so many different ways. So I thank you. I think that's a really important point. And so let's make sure our donors want to be recognized. Yeah. We know how they want to be recognized. And then how do we actually make sure we're recognizing them in a meaningful way?
So I can speak to that. So just, you know, going back to what we even said before about how genuine can we be here, because, and also our previous conversation about, do we know our donors? Because some donors are going to get quite offended if you want to send everybody a gift, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're thinking, well, I don't want my money going towards some trinket. I want my money going directly to the programming. So we don't have to think of recognizing, you know, just as you said, in terms of just a stale donor wall or gift that we're sending to all our donors. We can really oftentimes, you know, even pair recognition with engagement by just, you know, kind of simply inviting our donors in and just kind of telling them about, you know, thanks in person and an event specifically for them. Because sometimes that exclusivity is a great benefit for donors. Like, oh, I'm going to a donor event. It doesn't have to be a splashy event. It can be just coffee. And this is what mm-hmm. we've been up to with your dollars. A testimonial from someone who's enjoyed the services that the donors helped. It can be, the more personal that we can be and the more genuine we can be, that'll work for a lot of our donors. But again, if we have a sense of who our donors are, how much time we have as an organization is going to inform that, because if you sometimes, you know, events can be very time consuming and we don't mm-hmm. want to do an event. So maybe that's something special for our top donors. I agree with what you said about we can be creative and we can look at what can we handle as a staff and who should we focus on, who's really important to recognize, because that'll really help us to manage our time and our workload.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think some of the things we've talked about already, like being genuine, timely, you know, all those things are true with the recognition piece as well. But, you know, to your point, know what's important to your donors. Mm-hmm. You know, some people really want their name on a wall and some people really don't. It's so interesting. I've seen donors get very upset if their name was missed, even though it didn't, like it was 2 days late from the year end. And so they didn't get their name on the wall. So, you know, again, understanding your donors and what it means to them is really, really important. Let's talk about engage. This is probably my favorite because I feel like there's a lot of room for creativity.
Yeah.
And I think, You've mentioned a couple ways to recognize and engage some of your high-level donors, but where I think a lot of organizations struggle is how to engage the broader base of donors. And so let's start with that. Like, how do we actually scale engagement in a way that allows us for it to still be meaningful, to still be meaningful, but then to also be scalable?
Well, I'll start. I think one way you can do that when you're deciding how you're going to engage your donors, again, I like to look at data, maybe to see the demographic of your donors. So, for example, if you have maybe younger donors, maybe social media is a great way to engage them. I think it depends on sort of the donor profile you have. Rex, I don't know if you want to speak to that a little bit more, but I think starting with the data is a good way to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. We often talk about, like I said before, what are you already doing, right? So, if you've already got an e-newsletter that you're producing monthly, and you have a new donor, then you can invite the donor to subscribe to your e-newsletter. Something as simple as that, like in encouraging them to participate in things that you're already doing, can be really helpful. So that you're not trying to necessarily come up with them, because that's a lot of stress for some people, trying to come up with these new things and how are we going to manage that within our already existing workload. So we always encourage people to just take a look at what you're already doing, and can we include donors in this maybe program we're doing or thing that we're already producing, or can we shift or change the focus to include communications that will also speak to our donors. So that's a really, really important thing to just manage your workload.
Excellent. So all of this is based on the assumption that the more we steward our donors, the more likely it is that they will keep giving and or increase their giving. And so I want to, I guess, punctuate that with, we still have to ask, yeah. Right? And so, and going back to our first points, like, how do you find donors? Let's talk, like, we've talked about the foundation work of stewardship, and you mentioned some of the data points to look for in terms of taking our list of supporters and trying to identify ones that we want to increase their giving or continue their support, based on their behavior and their interest in the organization, how do we actually then turn that into upgrading donors or asking them to make a more significant contribution?
Well, I think everything that we've talked about to this point, really what you're trying to do is we're laying the foundation for that relationship. And I think by the time we've done all this work, we've been acknowledging our donors, maybe we've identified donors that we possibly want to make major donors. We've done all this legwork to this point. So I feel by the time you've done all that work that the ask isn't as hard, because you've already set the foundation up until that point. You've done your stewardship, you've built the relationship, and you get to the point, you have the language that Roxanne had mentioned before. Your organization knows your mission. You know what the language is around that. So by the time you need to make the ask, it won't be as hard or difficult.
Totally. I talk about it as mini yeses. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we talked about that in our last conversation, which is you're doing all these things to move donors towards giving by these micro yes, like, yes, I like that, or yes, I appreciate that. And, moving them towards that. So Roxanne, sorry, I cut you off. So what do you,
no, that's
sorry, interrupted you.
I was just going to add on to what Rochelle said. And you said it as well, but the thing is, the one of the purposes of stewardship too is that we don't want our donors to only hear from us when we want to ask them for money. If I only hear from someone when they ask me for money, I'm going to stop taking those calls. So we're setting up this relationship with the donor where they know that we might just be calling to communicate and tell them what we're up to. And so just to add on to what both you and Rochelle said, is if we've been telling the donors, you know, we've been inviting them to celebrate our successes, and we've been telling them about what we're working on and where we're also looking to expand or improve, or, you know, areas where we need some help, then by the time it's time to ask them, they really should already be aware of kind of where we're going and some of the things that we're working on. So it'll be a familiar thing for them. And now you're setting yourself up for a situation where the donor is prepared to talk about, okay, well, I already know about this project. How am I willing to support it? So it does make it a much easier.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely agree. I feel like we've covered a lot. Yeah, and yeah. I want to make sure there's nothing else you want to add before we wrap up the conversation. But yeah, any final thoughts or points that we didn't cover?
You know, I think the only thing I would add that, you know, again, we always, it's this sort of uncomfortable thing for people to talk about their boards. but I just want to
add. We like uncomfortable.
Yeah,
let's go. Yeah.
For anybody who is kind of heard us talk about that earlier, you know, a board's involvement in fundraising is great. And organizations that have a culture where their boards are contributing to the organization, and or are participating and helping with the asks, those organizations or the leaders of those organizations are going to feel like they have so much more support to have mm-hmm. a board involved. And it's not about how much your board members are donating. It is awesome for an organization to say we have 100% support from our board. It doesn't matter if it's a $5 donation from one person, if that's what they can give. But to have that 100% support and to have a culture where your board is willing to participate and in fundraising, because it really is part of their job, is to see the organization into long-term success and for them to be able to accomplish their mission into the future. So, you know, I just wanted to put that point in towards the end too, that we can't be afraid to, even as we're recruiting board members, to let them know, like, we have a board that's active in fundraising, and we would encourage you to participate if you're going to participate on the board.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. And also, I think that all the things we've talked about today are, you know, giving themselves absolutely, but all the stewardship pieces, which is, as we've hopefully made this point, really, really important to fundraising, but doesn't involve asking. I think it's such a natural way for the board to, especially if they're reluctant to fundraise, really natural way for them to contribute towards mm-hmm. your fundraising. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I thank you for mentioning that, because it is so true. All of these things, you know, engaging with donors, thanking them, that's not hard for the board to do.
Right. Yeah.
And can feel really good. And it definitely helps your fundraising bottom line. So excellent. Roxanne, Rochelle, where can our listeners learn more about you and the great work that you do?
Sure. They could just pop on our website at www.storypoint.ca, and you can find out what we do there. And I just want to make a mention too, we also have a free resource, an ebook for organizations to help them manage right now with fundraising during COVID-19. So just, it has some good resources in there to help you out at this challenging time.
Excellent. Thank you both so much for joining me. I'm so glad we had this conversation. And I know our listeners will love it. So thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Well, folks, that's it for today's episode of The Small Nonprofit. I'm your host, Cindy Wagman, and this show is brought to you by The Good Partnership. As a reminder, if you want more resources around raising more money for your small nonprofit, visit thegoodpartnership.com and download our free fundraising strategy guide. I'll see you next week.